Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Marion Blakey, Administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration. Joining us in our conversation is Dave Abel.
Marion, in the first segment, you talked about the need for you to balance between strategic planning and operations. And we talked a lot in the last segment about the operations of the FAA and the increase in demand. Let's flip back and talk a little bit about strategic planning. How in the organization do you do strategic planning?
Well, you know, it's pretty challenging in an organization that is really required to keep up with transactions on millions of them a day. In other words, unlike a lot of agencies of government, the FAA really operates a system, and both achievements and occasional mistakes are very public. So it's hard to pull back and then to say, nope, we're going to take a longer view and we're going to set goals and then attach not only metrics to those goals so we can tell whether we are meeting them or not, but we're going to tie our budget to those goals and see what it's costing us and see whether we can afford to do this and continue to keep up on it on a week in, week out, month in and month out basis. The way we tackled it was that we decided that we would construct a flight plan for the FAA, a rolling five-year plan that was going to, as I say, be tied to performance measures and tied to our budget. That does, believe me, get the attention of all your executives in a hurry, because that means that everything is going to be run by a strategic plan, a business plan. As many of us know in government, I think there are probably strategic plans all over town that are gathering dust on shelves. You have one, you post it on your website, and that's the end of that. Ours is one that we developed over the course of about 6 months. It was a very arduous process of really trying to determine what the kind of goals and initiatives were that would genuinely improve our system, that would genuinely advance safety, and how you would measure that, how you would measure our achievements internationally, because we wanted the FAA to be much more proactive internationally. Frankly, set the standards globally for aviation, and how we were going to set standards of organizational excellence that really would put us first in government. That's the goal there, and we're not shy about saying so. But we worked very hard internally, and then we had the plan in draft put out there for comment by all of our stakeholders. We held town hall meetings. We encouraged comments from our employees. And then we posted the plan on our website and said, we are going to be measured by this. I hold meetings every month where all of our executive team comes together. We spend a full day together going over all of those metrics. Are we hitting it? Are we not? Are we making our numbers? Are we not? And we are then accountable on a quarterly basis, just like a corporation, for whether we're doing it or not. We use a simple system, red, yellow, green, but people who want to click into it, we have a good software-based system called PB Views that allows people to go as deeply as they want to into the specific initiatives and performance measures of the FAA and see specifically how we're doing on those. And because we do tie our pay at the FAA, the annual awards and bonuses that frankly are automatic just about everywhere else in government. And ours, we have to make our numbers. Last year, we didn't make all of our numbers. And as a result, we only awarded 85% of what is usually the annual increases, the quality step increases, all of that, which we combine for our organizational success increase. We only awarded 85% because that was really what we made on our numbers. This year for 04, I'm just doing the assessment right now with our executive team. We're going to do better than that, but we're still not hitting every goal. And that's because they're stretch goals, but we intend it to be that way. We've just published our new draft plan. We'll be rolling it out soon. And at this point, I'm pleased to say we've had over 1,000 comments and suggestions on it. That's good, because that means both our stakeholders and, very significantly, our employees. 80% of the comments came from our employees. They've got ownership in it, and that makes a huge difference.
Who participated in the initial development of the plan?
You know, it started out with executive-led teams, but then we worked it out through our facilities, and then we asked our customer base to come in and meet. The FAA is not short on having advisory groups and people we can count on to help us with good advice. And frankly, it really was a big group effort. I don't take any personal ownership in this. It's something that needed to be developed organically, and I think that's one reason why it's working.
Can you provide us a couple of examples of things that you measure? What would be some example measurements that are in the plan?
Well, I certainly can. One of them, for example, is to reduce the risk of runway incursions. Two planes getting too close together on a runway, vehicles getting out there, and I'm proud to tell you that we set specific numbers, that we were trying to drive down the number of those incidents because we believe it has a very fundamental effect on safety. Reduce the number of Alaska accidents. You might say, why Alaska? Well, because frankly, that was where we saw the greatest incidents of accidents and fatalities. Being a pilot in Alaska used to be a high-risk profession, largely because of terrain and weather. But we knew we could take on some of those issues with new technologies, and we did. When I look at questions of how we operate the system, we looked at things like on-time performance. How are we doing from the standpoint of actually being within 15 minutes of the time passengers expect to arrive at the gate? We don't control it entirely. That's also a part of weather and the way the airlines schedule. But we've got specific metrics. Frankly, that was one last year we didn't make. So I could go on, but that gives you some idea. You know, these are not soft goals.
And you mentioned that a number of the employees, in fact, a large percentage of the employees are rewarded based on being able to meet these metrics. Are they rewarded on meeting all of the metrics or ones that apply to their specific job?
We do it on two levels, if you will. I am proud of the fact that 75% of the FAA's workforce, and this includes our unionized workforce to a very significant degree, is on a pay-for-performance system. We have what we call an organizational success increase, which means that out of the 30 goals that we have for the FAA, we're expected to meet 90% of those if, in fact, people are going to get the full OSI, as we call it. Then there are specific also awards that go for the more detailed duties that each individual employee has. And those increases also are really tailored to their responsibilities. So they vary from one part of the FAA to another.
As long as we're talking about the employees of the FAA, can you tell us a little bit about some of the human resources challenges you face in the organization today?
Well, you know, I bet like much of government, from what I understand, we're dealing with an aging workforce. And that's not surprising, particularly for the FAA, because of two things. One is that when you think about the folks you want out there inspecting airplanes and providing oversight from the standpoint of certifying aircraft and all of that, needless to say, you draw on very experienced people. A lot of them come out of the industry. They're highly trained. But that means it is an older workforce on the whole. Another phenomenon was that for our air traffic controllers, the PATCO strike meant that large numbers were hired in the early 80s because President Reagan fired over 10,000 air traffic controllers, and the need to replace those all happened within a few years. Those folks are reaching the maximum retirement age, which is 56, as the system is set up. So we're going to see large numbers mustering out over the next 10 years, and that means we're going to be hiring lots of people, and we have to figure out a plan that both figures out how to begin to step that up and how we can train highly efficiently so that you move people into the system well.
How long does it take for when someone decides to become an air traffic controller, how long does it take before they can actually work in the system? Is it a long lead cycle or is it relatively short?
It depends, of course, on the experience base that they bring. We recruit from the military where they've been controlling live traffic. We recruit from schools around the country where they may have spent 4 years in an undergraduate degree learning a lot. But we also recruit people straight in. Average is 3 to 5 years to be a fully certified controller, particularly at the more complex facilities. Now, fully certified means that means you can work all positions in some of our most complex facilities out there. We think probably as we need to step up the pace on this, we're going to use simulators, for example, which is something that has been highly successful, as you know, in training of airline pilots. The FAA hasn't relied on it as much. We believe in simulating all sorts of circumstances that hopefully controllers will never see, but in the actual airspace that they're going to control, we'll be able to bring people through the system more quickly, and that would be a good thing.
In 2002, the FAA won an award for the most improved government agency. I'd be curious about some other awards you've won as well, and I guess sort of even then sort of, you know, how you continue to improve to win these awards.
Well, you know, we do focus on that a lot. I really do believe that it is important to have people recognize the excellent performance and the real steps that we're taking to be a performance-driven organization. For example, we were very pleased that we were with the Department of Transportation, top agency in government in terms of the president's management agenda. 4 out of 5 of the key scores we were green on. So we were right up there in the very top tier, and the FAA drove a lot of that because we're a big part of the Department of Transportation. The Association of Government Accountants in this last year gave us award for our performance and financial report. We're very proud of that. We're proud of the fact that we have had clean audits for the last 3 years, and believe me, we're working very hard to get another one this year. Customer Satisfaction Index, as I say, this continues to go up, and we're looking at expanding that so that we have the real measure of how people feel we are doing in terms of being responsive to their needs. So all of these are the kinds of things that, you know, as I look at it, we're working very hard, I will tell you this, to get off the GAO's high-risk list. I'm sure there are folks out there who know government agencies are often targeted there. The FAA's financial performance has been there for a while, and I'm very hopeful that we're going to move off of that as a result.
That's interesting. What are the implications for the FAA of things such as commercial space travel? We'll ask Marion Blakey of the FAA for her thoughts on what the future holds for the FAA when the Business of Government Hour continues.